You're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM. Good afternoon. You're listening to KYRS. You're also listening to Praxis. I'm your host, Taylor, and today I'm live in the studio with my dear friend who's never been on the show before, but I'm very excited, Cicely Thompson. She's a filmmaker and general rabble-rouser, I think, who helped me out this week recording some interviews and some audio from the vigil Because Black Lives Matter this past Saturday at the county courthouse. So basically, if people didn't get a chance to be there and want to hear some of what happened, and I guess our take on what happened, where it's going, where we're going in Spokane, this is a good opportunity. So does that cover it?
Yes. Well, thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah. Do you want to say anything about why you said yes when I was looking for people to do that? And
Well, I was already actually going to go to the event to show my support and wanted to see and connect with other members in Spokane that were, you know, fighting the fight and is about equality and trying to figure out, you know, where do we start to actively make change in Spokane. So I was already going to go down there. So I didn't mind picking up some audio bits for you.
Mm-hmm. And doing audio instead of video.
Yeah.
I know when there was certain stuff.
It hurt. I was like, oh, I need a camera.
Yeah, we can. Yeah, if you ever want to team up and make this into a TV show,
okay,
I'm into that. But
I would be too.
More work for one person. So I guess overall, like we said, obviously this last week has been totally insane and tragic.
Yes.
And you know, July 6th shooting of Alton Sterling, and then July 7th shooting of Philando Castile, and then the shooting of all the five police officers in Dallas. We're going to kind of talk about all of it through the hour.
Okay.
But I think start with some of the audio from the actual vigil in Spokane so we can get a little sense of what's going on here in Spokane. So I'm just going to start with a few interviews that Cicely did with folks who were there, and then we'll talk about that, and then play some of these speeches for you because they were also really great. So
that has been going on this past week, it was really nice to see something like this happening in our community. I had to be a part of it. I had to come down here. I had to see the faces of support in Spokane. So that was one of the biggest reasons I came down. One of the great things that I saw when I got down here, it was really nice to see like two officers just kind of in the crowd. It didn't look like they were, you know, guarding. Like, it was as if they were supporting. And that was really... it just touched something in me to know that some people get that Black Lives Matter actually means all lives matter. It's not exclusive. It doesn't exclude anybody, but it includes everybody. I thought that was really amazing. As far as in Spokane and the changes, I'm just excited to see people's eyes open and to see people be aware of reality and not continue to feel as though we can't acknowledge reality. We can't acknowledge black. We can't acknowledge white, and that there's beauty in that. So I'm excited.
Just down really to support the Black Lives Matter movement and just support the Spokane community as we are all engaging and wrestling with everything that's happened this last week especially, and then how we hope to continue to progress and realize that we need to continue to progress.
All right, so the reason I came down here today is because, you know what I'm saying, obviously as a black man of color, I want to stand in solidarity with other brothers who, and women and sisters who are being killed by, you know, police and experiencing police brutality throughout, you know, the nation. And I'm a Chicago native, and, like, you know what I'm saying, like, me coming here, it's just like, you know, I wanted to be able to march and hit the streets and be like, yo, like, silence is hitting the streets and making your voice heard. It's cool that we're on the footsteps of, you know, county. You know what I'm saying? Where, you know, people are detained illegally sometimes and also detained without, you know, the proper, I guess, whatever it could be. But I don't know. I think that there could have been more. I wish that was someone my age that could have spoke, you know, like younger people that could have spoken, that could have been there to be able to address how they felt, you know what I'm saying? Because we're all walking home. We don't know if we're going to make it home, you know? So I think there needs to be a little bit more. Yeah, we broke silence, but I saw a lot of white allies talk today, and I think they should have been in the back while we spearheaded the issue.
So I really like all of what those people had to say, but I wanted to kind of talk about what that young man at the end had to say. I don't know if we have his name for sure, so I don't want to say the wrong name. But what did you think about any of what they had to say? But
I liked it. I liked hearing everyone's view about it and the comfort that people had to come to the rally and show support with the police officers being there and the citizens of Spokane. So I thought that was great. I also feel what the gentleman is saying about doing more and wanting to see more. Mm-hmm. I definitely believe in that. I thought that this this event was a good first step.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really eager to see what community as a whole, what Spokane community as a whole would like to really do and be out there in the streets, like he said, and really making a difference and really calling each other out when need be, and the police stepping up as well and showing that they're in support of this and in this violence that's in our streets.
Yeah, definitely. And it was good. It was good to hear that, especially having him come from Chicago. And it sounds like pretty recently move here to Spokane, because we're in such a weird category. Like,
yes.
I'm kind of in this bubble where I get a little bit frustrated in Spokane sometimes because I have a lot of friends online who are doing, specifically doing, like, Black Lives Matter stuff in Philly and in New York and other places like that, you know, where it's definitely, you know, like, they're shutting down one street or another in Philadelphia, like, every other week.
Right.
You know, like, every week.
Yes.
And just, like, going to, showing up at people's offices and, like, shutting down business as usual. And it seems to be pretty easy for them to turn out people to do that, to just say, like, obviously, and maybe it's partially, you know, demographic, but I don't know if that's what it is in Spokane. I think it's a conservative place, but
I don't think I think disruption actually gets people's attention, and we don't do enough disruption. I mean, going to seek some information about a group of people that doesn't affect you directly, I mean, who's going to do that? So as soon as we start making a little bit more noise, like the gentleman said, hitting the streets, I think people will respond and say, oh, what is this? What are they talking about? I'm interested in learning. And then understanding what Black Lives Movement is, and then trying to get involved in that and support us in this growing and doing it peacefully is very important, because that's what we're about. So,
And that's what's been going on, I mean, all over the place, I think, with very little exception. So that's good. And yeah, so I'd like to meet this guy and see what his ideas are. And I think it is really good. I mean, how many people do you think were there on Saturday? I didn't get an official number.
There was over 400 supporters down there.
Yeah, that was about what I thought.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think the actual number might have been 419, 420.
Okay, yeah. Like it definitely felt like it's definitely the most that there's been in Spokane on this specific
topic. Yes.
Yeah. So that's a good start. And I did like that it was at the county courthouse. We haven't done anything major there in a long time. And
he
has a good point that and we could have closed that street. Like, it was, people were spilling into the street just because it was so crowded in the front.
Yeah, it was
so
really packed.
People just stumbled backwards a little bit further. They would have accidentally been a direct action day. But I think I want to, the other thing that I kind of want to pick up as a thread in this that he talked about was wanting to see younger people on the mic, and also about white allies, you know, white people who are there, which is obviously, I guess we're on the radio, but people know, like, that's the category I am in, and what the role is. And I think that's a really interesting question too, you know?
Yeah. Of what your position is in making change in your community as whatever race that you are, and or gender, really pushing it. So I definitely agree with the gentleman of
I don't think it's up to white people to be in charge or in the front of the march, you know.
You definitely being side by side, though, I think is important to show that support and understanding that we're in it together, because it's wrong, you know, whatever our differences is, it's like, but we're standing right now because, you know, police killing unarmed black men is wrong. Like, yeah, they're, you know, this is wrong. So mm-hmm. standing together, I think, is most important.
Yeah. But not trying to dictate the agenda.
Exactly. Yes, I do understand. Us taking the reins on it as an African-American.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think I want to start with Sandy's speech, Sandy Williams, who she's going to introduce herself in the audio, but she has been on the show. She's the editor and founder of the Black Lens News, mm-hmm. Which has just been a huge, I think, addition to the media landscape in mm-hmm. Spokane. She's also a filmmaker. She's a journalist. She's just a totally rad activist. And I really loved her speech, so I just wanted to share it here.
For those of you who know...
Wait, we're not ready yet. We are ready. Sorry about that, everyone. Live radio. I was doing this. So yeah, here's Sandy's speech.
Know me, know that I speak all the time, and it's pretty easy for me. I just sort of spew it out. But I tell you, I've been working on this and working on this, and I'm having a really hard time figuring out what to say. So I had to, thank you, I had to write to make sure that I got it out. People have been asking me over the last week, so what do you think and what do you feel? And so this morning I wrote it down. So I'm going to share it with you if I can. So I figured out that I wasn't sure what to say because I was trying to be careful about what I said. I was trying to figure out how to share what I was feeling without hurting people's feelings. Because I was afraid that if I told you how I really feel, that we would lose a good majority of this audience, which we need to help us make this happen. So I was doing this balancing act, trying to figure out how to say it but not say it. You know what I mean? And I realized that that's what black folks do a lot, is we do this balancing act where we're trying to speak our truth, but not so much of it that it scares y'all away. Because I can't tell you how many times I've been described as an angry black woman.
Right.
And the media will pick up that one little angry sentence out of the whole plethora of things that I say, and that's what you'll see to justify the narrative that I'm an angry black woman. Well, today I'm an angry black woman. So, I am the Eastern Washington representative for the Washington State Commission on African American Affairs. I am also the publisher of the Black Lens newspaper. I am also a mother, a sister, an aunt, a friend. I am the daughter of a retired registered nurse, and I am the daughter of an Army veteran who served this country for 50 years. I graduated Phi Beta Kappa, Phi Kappa Phi, cum laude from college with a bachelor's degree, and I have a master's degree from the University of Southern California. I've spent decades of my life fighting against racial issues, decades of my life. But today, right now, none of that feels like it matters much, because what I am right now in this moment is a black woman. And despite all the people who are constantly telling me that they don't see color, yes, you do. Yes, you do see color. So can we please start right there, right now? Yes, we do see color. I see your color. You see my color. We see color. Because if you cannot see my color, you cannot see me. If you cannot hear my story, as uncomfortable as it is, you cannot know me. If you cannot stop defending your position and minimizing my position long enough to recognize the reality of my experiences, experiences that are different from yours, then you cannot be my brother and you cannot be my sister. I have a daughter who's 28 years old, and those of you who are parents know that your kids get to a point in their life where they don't have time for you anymore. They sort of go off and do their thing, and you sort of are chasing after them to get their attention. But since the shootings last week, she has called me every day needing to talk. And the fear in her voice has broken my heart because I can't fix it. I know that all cops are not bad.
All right.
I know that. But some are. Some are. And there are good cops who are tainted by a bad system.
Yes.
There are good cops who are tainted by biases that they may not even know that they have.
That's right.
And there are good cops who are just plain scared.
Me.
And afraid for their lives, and they're acting on that. They're good cops. And the problem is, the scary part is, I don't know which ones are which.
That's right.
I don't know which ones are which. My daughter was walking alone one night and she was scared. And so she called me, and I was on the phone with her, and as she was walking, probably about block and a half away was a police officer. And she had a choice in that moment to decide, do I go to this man because I'm afraid or not? And she talked that through with me. And he turned and he had a gun on him. And she stopped and she panicked. And she chose to be alone in the dark rather than go towards that man, because she did not know how he would receive her if the first thing he saw was a young woman, or the first thing he saw was a young black woman who made him fear for his life. So she did not go to him. And I'm angry about that, that I live in a country that my baby can't get help because she's afraid of the people who are supposed to help her. I'm angry about that. I'm angry that I'm worried for her safety. I'm angry that I'm worried for the safety of my brother and my nephew and my uncles. And I'm angry that people who do not live in this fear feel justified in telling me how I'm supposed to feel about it. About it and how I'm supposed to respond to it. All you got to do is go on Facebook and see all the people telling me that this is inappropriate. I'm angry about that. But most of all, I'm angry about the silence. Yes. The silence. The crushing, deafening silence that happened after the first and the second murders. Silence from my allies. Silence from my community. Silence from the people who tell me how much they support me, how much they respect me, how much they admire me, how much they love me. Silence. I'm angry about the silence. Martin Luther King Jr. said, "There comes a time when silence equals consent." Yes. So Spokane, silence equals consent. Spokane City Government, silence equals consent.
Yes.
Spokane Police Department, silence equals consent. That we can finally say what needs to be said. The truth, the hard stuff, the uncomfortable stuff, and do what needs to be done. The hard stuff, the uncomfortable stuff, because I am tired of coming to these things.
Yes,
I don't know about you.
Yes.
I'm tired of it. I want my kid, the one that I love more than anything in this world, to stop being scared. And I know that there are other mothers and fathers who want their kids to stop being scared too. So I applaud you for coming. I applaud the organizers of this event. And can we please, for once, really do something about this stuff? Thank you.
All right, so that was Sandy Williams, editor of the Black Lens News, longtime activist, works on so much stuff. And I just really loved her speech. Thank you, Cicely, for recording it. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Praxis on KYRS, Thin Air Community Radio. I'm talking with Cicely Thompson, who graciously recorded this audio for me and turned up to do that. So, yeah, I was listening to, so I was working, which is why you were doing that.
Right.
So I biked down on my lunch break and I missed Sandy's speech. And I was editing it today in my apartment, just like listening to it by myself. Like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, it was so, a great speech. It was so passionate and it was so from the heart. And I think she was a lot of our voices that day to just say, you know, I'm angry about this. There needs to be change and demanding, like, this needs to stop. Like, no more. So I thought that was, it was really moving. And I'm trying to keep clean audio to record it, you know, and I'm just like, man, this is, yes, like, yes. So, you know, it was great. It was a great piece.
Yeah, I really loved, I think the most, there is no like most important piece to pull out because it was all really important. Mm-hmm. But at the end, talking about silence being consent.
Yes.
I think that's what people need to hear.
Yes.
Especially, and I appreciate that she took it to not just, you know, individuals who are there, who obviously are already care enough to be there, but Spokane City Government, Spokane Police Department.
Right.
I just think that that's something. And that's when people are talking. My other favorite part was when she was talking about not all cops are bad,
right,
sort of deal, but it's a bad system.
Mm-hmm.
And she can't tell the difference. That was like, that needs to get made into a meme and sprinkled everywhere.
I'm glad she shared with us about her daughter being afraid walking home and scared of the cops, and being an African-American woman myself, I've been scared and looked at the cops to say, should I go tell them that, you know, this guy looks like he's tailing me, or is he going to grill me 21 questions and act like I'm doing something I shouldn't be doing? That definitely crosses my mind. So I understood completely what she was commenting on with her daughter's experience, because that's happened to me. She's just like, oh, what's going to happen? And knowing that stuff happened, knowing people that got might roughed up by the cops or something, or just stuff that I hear about and see, is overwhelming. And to know just because I'm different than them, they might do something that's not okay. And then I'm thinking they're supposed to help me, you know, and who's going to stop them? Like, who's going to help me?
Mm-hmm.
If the cops are, because the country's showing right now that these cops are doing stuff and no one is handling this. Like, so it's so overwhelming. And I think that's why it's so important to support Black Lives Matter movement and ending violence from these police officers. Like, this has to stop.
Yeah. And there were, I just thought that she handled it really well. And there were obviously other speeches that day. There was a person there who live streamed the whole event, like, from the time she got there. And I put that video up on the Praxis Facebook page. So facebook.com/praxisradio, PRAXISRADIO. And so that's up there. But I think that there was this temptation to kind of talk about the police who were killed and everything. And that's, we've talked about that a little bit before the show, but I like that Sandy really kept the focus. She said, obviously, like, violence is the problem, but right now we are talking about specific, like, racialized state-sanctioned violence by police. So,
and them not speaking up, their silence is ridiculous. Like, the gentleman that was labeled a suspect in the Dallas shooting, like I was talking to you earlier about that, that the police department of Dallas will not speak up and say he had nothing to do with it and clear his name, because there are people that are looking to retaliate because those officers were killed that night. And I just think it's I'm appalled that these police officers, the department heads, are letting this be okay and blatantly saying, well, your life doesn't matter that much, after these gentlemen explained to them that they're scared and they're being harassed and death threats are happening, and the department doesn't even want to say, you know, these guys are clear, nothing to do with it. That blows my mind that they're okay with that. But then they're like, oh, but get out of the street, but don't have a peaceful rally. Like, what? Excuse me?
Yeah. It's really, I think, coming apart because of all those contradictions, you know? Like, and like just today, I just saw, I don't know if you've seen this yet, the chief of police in Memphis, who just like in Dallas is African-American, like the chief of police. In Memphis, there's pictures of him at a Black Lives Matter march, you know, like being right there in it. And I think that is really good. But it shouldn't matter. Like, the race of the police officer shouldn't matter for that. Like, we should have white cops like seeing the light of like, this is bad and we don't want to do it anymore. If we're supposed to believe that it's a few bad apples or whatever.
Exactly.
Which, like, the numbers don't really necessarily tell that story because of all the silence, you know? I think if they want trust, then they have to show up.
They have to, speak up for what's wrong and what's right, and they're not. They're just covering it up. They're sending these officers on paid vacations after every single killing. And just, it's whatever. And they're taking a long time to try to even indict anyone. And everyone seems to just get off after a year of suffering and crying and wonder and the community coming together and trying to show support. And then the officers are like, okay, now that they're done with vacation, they might be on desk duty or something.
Yeah, or just get shuffled around to a different department or something, kind of forgotten about. Yeah, I just saw today on Democracy Now, the only person to be tried or charged at all in the death of Eric Garner in New York City is the guy who filmed the video.
I seen that.
Which, there's not a law that I know. Like, I don't know how they pulled that off, because it's legal to film anything out on the sidewalk.
Right, in public. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was whack. And he got 4 years or something. I need
to
look it up.
Did he get sentenced? Yeah, we should look that up.
We'll get to it. But
I did just hear that they were arresting him. And he was the only one in the entire case, after we saw that a police officer put Eric Garner in a chokehold and nothing happened. So I would definitely like to dig in deeper with that story and see what that gentleman got sentenced to.
Yeah, we can look it up actually while I want to also play part of Liz Moore's speech, because she touches on something tangible that people can be doing right now. We obviously have to be mobilizing and just like pushing the issue. And as the guy, the gentleman in the first videos of the crowd said, you know, like, this is a good step. Like, we broke silence. And then, like, what are we going to do now?
Right.
There's some stuff in motion that Liz talked about, regarding changing the policies around use of force in Washington state, that I want to play. And she also just addresses, you know, Spokane being very white, what can white people who care about justice be doing?
Be doing.
And, yeah. So I'm going to play that real quick, and then we'll hop back on. I want to pull out more of the stuff you were talking about Mark Hughes in Dallas, who was falsely accused.
Falsely accused, yes.
And then also just the craziness at the end of the hour of that shooting, and how the suspect was just killed with a robot.
Yes.
We're going to get to that, too.
Okay. So. Okay, great.
Yeah, I promise. So, but for now, we're going to hear from Lismore. Again, this is audio from this past Saturday's Black Lives Matter vigil at the Spokane County Courthouse. And here it is.
I feel really humble standing here with you, and I feel really privileged to be here with you, and I feel really privileged in my daily life that I do not worry when my 4-year-old son is in the back seat that my husband next to me is going to be shot by police. I feel really privileged that my 10-year-old son just cannot, has no reference point to understand what I talk to him about. You know, he has no reference point to understand why do some police officers feel afraid and mad at black people. Why, Mom? I don't know what to say to explain that to him, but I feel so privileged that he will never have an experiential understanding of that. So I'm with you today from the Peace and Justice Action League of Spokane. And I know there are a lot of Peace and Justice Action League folks here today. Thank you. That's exactly what I was hoping someone... Thank you. Thank you. Peace and Justice Action League is based in principles of nonviolence. And what we mean by that is that we need to expose and transform systems of violence and oppression. And when we say that, when we're talking about violence, we're talking about individual actions like shootings of anyone, by anyone. We're talking about collective actions like bombings and drones and war. And we're talking about ideologies that separate us and that create domination, exploitation, and oppression for the many and privilege for the few. The shootings of the Dallas police officers by snipers at the Black Lives Matter march are being used by some to try to paint a contrast between valuing the lives of African American people and valuing the lives of police officers. And we need to expose, challenge, and reject that idea. One of the core problems in this country is valuing some lives more. We have to reject that elitist ideology of racism, of sexism, of all forms of oppression and domination, and we have to reject that ideology through grassroots movements that clearly see and clearly articulate the realities of power differences in our society, in our politics, in our economy, created through policy over centuries. And we have to value each other in ways that sharpen and not diminish our commitment to challenge and transform structural violence that distorts and destroys the humanness of both oppressor and oppressed. So I want to say one specific thing we can all do right now. I know a lot of us are looking for what is a thing that we can do right now. How many people have heard of the John T. Williams Initiative? This is an initiative that would change Washington's deadly force laws. Right now, for a Washington State law enforcement officer to be prosecuted for inappropriate use of deadly force, the law requires the prosecutor to prove malicious intent. Try to prove beyond a reasonable doubt what's in somebody's heart. Can't do it. John T. Williams was a wood carver, Native American wood carver, who was killed by Seattle police. So this initiative is named after him. This initiative would take malicious intent out of our state's deadly force laws and allow police officers, law enforcement officers, to be prosecuted one step more easily when they use deadly force inappropriately. So let's get this done. This is a thing we can do. Let's do it. So I want to ask, finally, I want to talk with the white folks that are here, if I may. And I want to ask us to make some commitments and what I think for many of us are recommitments. But I know from talking to somebody this morning who was making signs that for some of us, this is the first thing folks have ever done. And good job. Good job doing it. But I want to ask my fellow white people, will we listen to people of color?
Yes.
Yes.
Will we move ourselves out of our comfort zones to act against racism?
Yes.
Will we take risks and do things we've never done before to fight racism?
Yes.
Will we not be scared away when somebody expresses anger?
No. Yes.
Will we continue to educate ourselves?
Yes.
Will we appreciate feedback and be grateful for critique when we're fortunate enough to receive it?
Yes.
Just like I did yesterday. You tell you what, sometimes you give feedback, sometimes you get feedback, and you're damn lucky if somebody bothers to give you feedback. Yes. Will we commit to end white silence?
Yes.
Will we challenge policies and practices that result in black people, people of color, poor people being targeted, jailed, saddled with fines, burdened with the collateral consequences of incarceration in our criminal justice system?
Yes.
Will we work every day to dismantle racism?
Yes.
All right, thank you.
So that was Liz Moore talking at the Black Lives Matter vigil this last Saturday. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Praxis. I'm your host, Taylor. I'm talking with Cicely Thompson, who recorded these interviews and is my twin.
Yes.
Yeah. In general, in life, we're talking about all of that right now. And that's all of the audio from the vigil we're going to share. But I did already share that link of the live stream. Do you want to talk a little bit, since you were there the whole time and you were much closer to the front than I was, because I biked up and there were 400 people to navigate, about anything else about the rally that you want to pull out that wasn't in the speeches?
We had a little kerfuffle during the vigil. A young man came yelling into the crowd very aggressively, that we were, you know, doing things wrong, and he wanted, you know, someone to listen to him about those things. So he was not too hostile, like just very aggressive in his demeanor and just yelling. Like, you could tell he just wants someone to listen, so he was yelling out a lot of things. So the whole crowd responded really well. Of course, their attention turned to see who it was. But after he got done yelling, we actually, in return, as a whole, started giving him hugs. So that was you could tell, kind of diffused the situation a little bit, that we weren't here to fight with you or mm-hmm. tell you that other people's lives don't matter. So he kind of, it was okay for after that point. He actually left shortly after that and then returned towards the end of the vigil and went out and yelled a few things and sat in the middle of the circle while Philip Tyler was speaking. Philip handled that very well as well. Mm-hmm. He actually just told the guy to stand up and say what he needed to say, what was going on. And he yelled about changing our hashtag and stuff like that. It was, mm-hmm. you know, lots of aggression, but we all handled it really well. And he just said that, you know, what can we agree on? And we, all, as a whole, as little 400 people in agreement, we agreed that we could all love one another. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty good. And then the young man actually calmed down after that, and we didn't have any.
Yeah. It sounded like that's what he was yelling, that he was like, why can't we just say love? Like, why can't we just say love everybody?
Yeah.
And I thought Philip handled it really, really gracefully and just said, like, that is what we're saying. And right. like, what other part of what was said today do you disagree with?
Right. Mm-hmm. Which, and I think that's pretty much his whole thing. He didn't say anything else that was concerning to him. And he was really talking about us using the words Black Lives Matter. That's mm-hmm. what was bothering him.
Yeah.
So,
and that's, I think there's, I'm hoping that that's getting, and I'm in a bubble. Like, it's so hard to tell from social media, like, if things are changing or not, you know, because I'm in a bubble of people who are most, I'm not totally in a bubble. I know a lot of people who are like, why can't we say all lives matter still?
Right.
But there's so much good stuff out there now, just like debunking that and explaining it. But I don't know. It's like Liz said in her speech, like, for a lot of people, for a lot of white people specifically, this last couple of years is the first time they've ever been made to think about race.
Yes.
And racism.
Yes.
So they're not literate about it, you know? Like, it's not something anybody in, at least, like, white communities talks about.
Yeah. Well, I know the feeling of they're uncomfortable, really. That's what it comes down to. I'm uncomfortable. Stop saying this. Stop doing this. Stop demanding me to take action. And then it's a lot of, okay, I understand what you're saying and I agree, you know, but don't make me do it. Like, it's still that battle, I think. And that's individually what people have to deal with every day and get up and carry themselves a certain way to say, I'm going to stand for this. And yeah, it makes me feel uncomfortable. But like I said earlier, it's wrong. You know, you would want someone to stand with you if your son got shot in the back, like.
Yeah.
You know, in a car seat, just standing, you know, sitting there and get shot. Like, so I think it's a lot of them being uncomfortable and being saying, oh, there's this group that's saying, hey, let's stop, you know. And then a lot of also just being sheltered and not aware of Black communities or African-American history or anything like that. Because I hear a lot of, well, why are you so angry and things like that? And it's a long time coming. You know, like, there's been a lot of anger in the Black communities for hundreds of years. We've been saying police brutality, the police are targeting us. The police are, you know, beating us without call. Nothing's happening. And they're coming in there murdering people and nothing's happening. And the difference is right now is that it's caught on video because everyone has a camera phone. So it's right in your face and it's bloody and it's gory and it's super emotional, it's sad, it's hurtful, and it's right there, and it's like, we need to change. And it's like, oh, well, you know. And then everyone wants to step back and do these baby steps when the truth is African-Americans have been living with that the entire time.
Yeah. And it's this balance, right? Because it's really exposed. The term I like for it is white fragility. Like, people are just really fragile because life is so insulated for you in this country in general. If you're white, obviously, like, oppression stack, and if you're poor, it's harder. If you're queer, it's harder. If you're a woman, it's harder. But if you are in that umbrella category of white, life's just easier in a lot of ways. And your parents tell you, like, oh, trust the police, that's a nice person, if you need help, or, you know, whatever, all these things. And when that starts to come apart, you know, people don't have the skills to deal. But what people have to understand is, like, your discomfort is not on par with people's actual suffering.
Right.
Like, your feelings are different than people's lives. Like,
yes.
Yeah. That's why I think the hashtag, so, but, like, Black Lives Matter, it's like, you know, people are basically saying, like, but my white feelings matter too.
Right.
And
exactly.
It's like, okay, but, like, handle that
right
in a different space. And once you've handled it, then come ready to engage.
But in Black Lives Matter doesn't mean we don't care about your life. And that's for some reason out there as well in social media that somehow Black Lives Matter means no one else. Like, and it's like, no, our lives matter too. Like, look at these numbers, look at these facts that's happening. And now you can see it. You can go YouTube all the police brutality in African-American communities right now and see it for yourself. So, you know, seeing is believing. So.
And that's what's also, I hear a lot of people saying, like, oh, the media is brainwashing people. The media is brainwashing people. It's like, no, it's 2016. Like, the mainstream media is, like, not even part of this conversation.
Right.
It's people on the internet with their own phones uploading their own lives.
Live, yeah.
Which is, I think, a lot more powerful. You can't argue with someone's life experience. You can try, and a lot of people are currently trying.
Right.
But, yeah. So, I wanted to share a few things to people who might be listening who are white, who want to be part of this. This is from the Quakers, from the American Friends Service Committee. They, I think, do excellent solidarity work around the world. And that's really, that's something that also, I get really caught up on semantics and stuff sometimes. And there were a lot of people calling for unity at the march. At the vigil. And the event's title was about solidarity. And I think there's, like, a slight difference. Because unity, like, if everyone's calling for unity right now, and the majority of people there are maybe white liberals, and they're like, yeah, unity, unity. It kind of suggests, like, calm down a little bit. Like, let's find what we can all agree on, and it might not be all the steps that we need. Right. Solidarity is more like, what does the black community say we need, and how can we help? You know?
Okay.
Like,
that's, yeah. Standing together rather than...
Mm-hmm. They both suggest togetherness.
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. So this is what they say. They say, remember that you are there as an ally in solidarity. It's not about you. Mm-hmm. No matter how outraged you feel, like, respect and be present to differences in emotion, experience, and politics. Don't provoke or antagonize police with your words or deeds. I think that's really important. I know I'm in a category of, like, I have a crazy temper, and you find out all this is going on, and then you see police there, and you, like, want to
tell them about
get wild and tell them about it. But,
let,
like, yeah, but they point out, like, you're putting the people of color at the event at much higher risk than yourself. Like, you antagonizing the police is not helpful. Mm-hmm. It's not your job to police the tone of an event. If you have a smartphone, use it to lift up the voices of the black people at the demonstration, posting photos and videos of people who are speaking. Not filling your social media with self-congratulatory photos of yourself at the demonstration. It says don't lead chants. Have other people lead chants. Support them with your voice. Anticipate that reporters may seek you for comment out of their own unconscious racial bias. Try to find out who the designated media spokespeople are, if there are any. And if a member of the press approaches you, say, you know, I'm a white ally here in solidarity, then direct them to the spokesperson, which is a really...
That's a good
thing to do. Don't hijack the message, you know, not bringing all lives matter type stuff. They say chanting all lives matter at a Black Lives Matter protest is like going to a funeral and telling the bereaved, hey, everyone dies.
Right.
Just pretty. Be responsible for yourself, meaning educate yourself about the organizations, leaders, and issues that are represented there. And then stay involved after the event is over. So stay engaged. So I thought those are helpful.
Yeah. Where is that at? Where can they?
That's
find
from,
that link?
I'm going to post it in the podcast notes at the end of the show, which you can find by going to KYRS.org, going to shows, finding Praxis. It's also on the website at AFSC.org, American Friends Service Committee. And I'll also post that on Facebook at Facebook.com/Praxis Radio. So, so we have like 10-ish minutes left. Do you want to talk about this? All the stuff in Dallas with Mark Hughes and share that video from
let's do that.
Roland Martin. Okay, because he...
I thought that was a prime opportunity for the cops to take responsibility and show some support and agree with us in the sense that, you know, we're trying to change, we're trying to do something, and they still have yet to say anything on behalf of falsely accusing that gentleman. So
yeah. So this is a story from Roland Martin at News One Now. I'll also post that link. You can find it at by looking up News One Now, hashtag News One Now, across social media. So I'm gonna play that. Oh, it shouldn't be starting yet. Sorry, give me 1 second. It's playing something else right now. We need to not have that happen. There we go. All right, so here that is. And they'll tell a little bit of the story of what happened. This is the man who was released. Photos of him were released as a suspect in the Dallas shooting.
And left up for 16 hours.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So this is him talking about that himself.
As we said earlier, America was stunned when five police officers were gunned down Thursday night after a peaceful Black Lives Matter march in Dallas. What was also stunning was when police named Mark Hughes a suspect. He's an African-American man who was carrying an AR-15 to show his Second Amendment rights. Well, all of a sudden, it was then revealed that he was not involved in the shooting, but the Dallas Police Department kept his picture up for 16 hours on their Twitter feed. I was in Dallas this weekend at Friendship West Baptist Church. I talked with Mark Hughes, his brother Corey Hughes, one of the marchers' organizers, and their attorney Lee Merritt about this and how they want an official apology from the Dallas Police Department.
The purpose of me carrying his rifle was I was standing in solidarity with the brothers. that were the cause of the protest, the guys that was exercising their right to carry and were violated just for no reason at all. So I was there standing in solidarity with my brothers.
So what does that say, though, even as an African-American, when you are carrying? I've seen other rallies when whites are carrying, and they've done it outside of state capitals and other places as well.
It says that there's a systematic problem that there's, we're not treated equally as others. I mean, that's what that says to me, that one group can do it and another can't. And we should be covered up under the same law, same constitution.
Corey, shooting breaks out. All of a sudden, you realize what's going down, and you go to your brother and say what?
Give the gun up before you die. The reason that is because, again, it goes back to what he said. You know, we live in a country where the Constitution doesn't work the same way it works for us, the same way it works for them.
Well, give it to him, bro. Give it to him, bro.
And so I understood the severity of the situation. I knew that it was important that he gave that gun up because we were running one direction and the cops were running towards us. And so I knew that some cop could look at him and misidentify him, and this interview could be a totally different interview. This nightmare could be a totally different nightmare.
But actually what ended up happening was what, in essence, you predicted, and that is all of a sudden photo gets flashed. Instantly, you are a person of interest. You are a suspect. And then we start seeing videos that come out of you actually standing there while shots are being fired. And folks say, no, he couldn't have been involved because he's also he's looking around himself. So really what your brother said still ended up happening.
In the past. It actually came to pass. And I thank God for my brother having that discernment, because at the end of the day, if he didn't do that, I feel with all my heart that, like I say, the conversation would be totally different. Totally different.
Lee, it took Dallas Police Department a long time to take his photo down. Many folks were saying, take it down. It was still being flashed all across the country. What are you now calling on Dallas Police Department to do?
It took them exactly 16 hours to actually take the photograph down at all. That's after they had been interviewed. That's after they had been interrogated. That's after they had been released and sort of let out the back door. And so the Dallas Police Department has never come forward and said, hey, they're no longer persons of interest. They're no longer suspects. These guys have been exonerated. And the call that they put out to the community to help them find them was never removed. And so they're still receiving death threats at their home. They're still under constant duress and fear for their safety and for the safety of their family. So it's only the responsible thing to do is to have the Dallas Police Department come forward and say, hey, these guys have been cleared of any wrongdoing. In fact, they helped bring about peace during this chaotic time.
Periscope, too.
Have any of you talked specifically with the police chief, with the mayor, since late Thursday night?
No, we hadn't talked to any of them, but when they did release us out the back door, before we left, we asked that very pertinent question. You guys have plastered my brother out for the world, not just locally, not just in Texas, but for the world, as a domestic terrorist. Are you going to recant that? And they told us very calmly, no.
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 What was your reaction when you heard them say that?
Well, I mean, honestly, I'm a pretty cool and collective guy, but I was infuriated. I was infuriated because what I said is that, unfortunately, we're in a time where tragedy has taken place. Five officers have lost their life. And when you tell me no, basically what you're telling me is you don't value my life. And so, again, it goes back. It all circles back to the reason we had to protest in the first place. We're trying to tell them again that black lives matter. And we walked out of the police station. Again, we felt like two guys that were black and our lives didn't matter.
Mark, still getting death threats. Are you, in essence, walking around with a swivel on your shoulders?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Prior to this, where I could walk and not have any caution, of course, I look at every individual that I see now because I could be a target, or they can be someone that's a family member of a lost one that's hurt and looking for revenge.
Do you regret bringing your weapon to that rally?
I do not. I do not regret it. I do not regret it. Again, like I said, I was standing in solidarity with my brothers, and I do it every day of the year.
Doesn't this also speak to the reality that there are simply two Americas, one white, one black, in that even if you're doing the same thing a bunch of folks did at Tea Party rallies, it still all of a sudden changes.
Absolutely, no question. You know, one of the first things that most people have asked us when they interview us is, why did you have the gun? And so what that suggests to us is, why are you exercising your constitutional right? And it infuriates us because it is, again, it goes back to the systematic racism. It goes back to the fundamental problem that we have as Black Lives Matter activists is we just want to be treated the same way. And a white man can have a gun and he's just exercising his right. Black man has a gun and now he becomes a domestic terrorist. And I think that's something that needs to be talked about in America.
All right. Gentlemen, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Kickstart your day.
Again, that was Mark Hughes and his brother talking on Roland Martin's show, News One Now. You can find that video and a lot of others at RolandSMartin.com. I'll post that link there. But yeah, Cicely pointed that out to me today, and I hadn't heard the extent to which that had happened. And I think that this case with Mark Hughes, and then also with the actual shooter, and just the whole way that the shooting in Dallas got spun out of control, kind of shows a different layer of why Black Lives Matter is so necessary.
Right.
You know,
I think that the Dallas Police Department, this was their opportunity, I feel like, very clear as day to say that, that, you know, they're human too. They make mistakes. They do that. But they're not actively making, like, that was the time to say, hey, we're actively making change on our side to show that we're not bad cops.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it just seems a little too overwhelming and sketch that you wouldn't clear somebody after somebody walked up to you. Like, he didn't even know he was a suspect or was wanted. So he actually was helping direct traffic to get out of there when the shooting started. He was actually side by side with the police officers on the ground helping. Mm-hmm. And after he left from there to go home, someone gave him a call and said he was a suspect. So he went mm-hmm. and turned himself in, and they interrogated him, did their process, found out that he wasn't involved at all. There's footage of him walking around while the shooting's happening. So he's right there. And also he handed over his gun to police officers on the ground initially because he knew he mm-hmm. knows he lives in a country that they might shoot him yeah. first and ask questions yeah. later.
And
so he went up there and said, hey, here's my gun. This mm-hmm. is who I am.
And it's so ironic because, I mean, with Philando Castile, he was originally pulled over because the police said they were looking for a suspect who, quote, had a wide nose. And so they pulled this guy over, and then they told him about a taillight, but there wasn't a taillight that was out. So it was for no reason. You know, so this is like the exact same. This is a higher stakes. Apparently it was high stakes with him getting pulled over.
Exactly.
We've seen that traffic stop can become high stakes. But this is just like a huge, like, macro version of that. And meanwhile, Micah Johnson, who they believe was actually the shooter, we can't ask him now because
right.
The police department called in their bomb robot, which, you want to talk about, you know, police militarization. This is it. I mean, to say there's, and first the media reported multiple snipers,
right.
kind of made it sound a lot more like this was a planned thing.
Right.
Like the whole rally was
and
a ruse to
exactly.
get police
try to
officers
connect
there
it to
and kill
the Black
them.
Lives Matter movement that, you know.
Which is inaccurate.
Right.
Yeah. So it's this one guy, and it's just so intense to see this contrast. You know, if Dylann Roof can walk in to a church, to a Bible study, kill 10 people and come out alive, be escorted out and brought to Burger King.
Brought to, right.
Like, and then this guy is killing police officers in a public area, which, you know, is intense and everything, but he doesn't, there's no attempt to arrest him. You just
right.
drop a bomb robot.
No negotiation.
On him. No due process.
Yeah. Nothing. Just send in a robot and.
Yeah. So.
And take him out.
I'll post some stuff about that, too, because it's a really interesting part of the story, I think, that we need to also address.
And I heard that was the first killing by law enforcement by robot.
In the country.
In
yeah.
the country. Okay.
The military has killed one U.S. citizen abroad with a drone, in a drone attack with no trial, and many people who are not U.S. citizens. But this was the first domestic in the U.S. U.S. citizen killed by a drone. So
yeah, and I'm not surprised because the MO for African Americans getting killed or doing crimes is automatic death. So Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, we're not going to ask questions. We're not going to do anything. We're just going to kill them, be done. No trial.
Yeah.
So
it's gross.
It is.
So that's what we're up against.
All right, Spokane, let's get out there and do some more supporting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we are actually out of time already, but been on. Do you have any last word you want to say, Cicely, before we go?
I'm going to be out there on the front lines. I would like everybody to join me out there. Whatever we can do to make a change, filling out initiatives, going to other rallies, staying connected with community members and seeing what they're about, what trying to change they're doing, and just being a part of them. Like, you know, stop being at home, sitting around, you know, wishing for change. Let's just be the change.
Right on. And if you missed any part of the show and you want to hear it, I will be posting the podcast later on today. You can find that at kyrs.org/shows/praxis or at facebook.com/praxisradio or directly at soundcloud.com/praxisradio, PRAXISRADIO. This has been Praxis talking with Cicely Thompson, hearing some audio from the Black Lives Matter vigil and rally last weekend. I'll be back next week with a brand new show. You're listening to KYRS, Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM.